Today's episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra. Are you happy because you win? Or do you win because you're happy? At only 2.6 carbs and 95 calories, it's only worth it if you enjoy it. Stay tuned for the Ultra Player of the Week coming up later in the episode. All right, welcome on to another edition of the Hollinger and Duncan podcast. And lots to discuss this week. You know who we are. No further introductions are required. There's no reason for any banter. It's all boring basketball talk here. So let's get right into that. And obviously, the two biggest stories this week are the All-Star Reserves and Minnesota moving on from their coach and hiring an assistant from another team. Which of those two do you want to start talking about here, John?
Let's talk about the All-Star Reserves first. Because I think, first of all, I think there's one conference where we talked about our reserve picks last week. At that point, I had DeRozan ahead of Zion Williamson for one of the last spots, and I kind of flipped by the time I wrote about it a couple days later because Zion kept going on his destroying tour. So I think they basically got the West right. You could argue for Mike Conley instead of Donovan Mitchell for that last spot. There are a couple other players in the West who have been pretty good that you could argue for, but I think they basically got the right 12 guys, and then hopefully, I'm hoping they take Mike Conley for Anthony Davis's injury replacement. It could end up being Shai Gilgeous-Alexander or Devin Booker. We'll see.
Yeah, it would be ironic if Booker were selected again as an injury replacement by the commissioner. I thought Booker actually should easily have been on the main team last year. And certainly, to me, Booker had as good an argument as Donovan Mitchell or Mike Conley. I thought that one was splitting hairs. As I rarely do, people will recall last week, I defaulted to sentimentality in saying Conley. And I hope that Adam Silver actually will do the same because it's a commissioner. I think we could see that. And the Suns got a player already. I mean, that's still this ridiculous thinking of a team with a certain record. Hey, the Knicks are two games under 500. They have to have someone because they're a surprise.
Amazingly, the guy who I thought would get in because of that did not get in. Who is Domantas Sabonis, but we'll talk about the East in a minute.
Yeah, we will. So, no, I thought it was pretty good. Shai has been awesome, obviously, just playing in Oklahoma City with that team that they have. It was just never going to happen, but certainly statistically, I think all those, De'Aaron Fox as well, I think you'd be kind of splitting hairs between the statistical arguments of a lot of these players, and so I think it ended up fine. Like, I got no problems at all with how it went, which is one of the first times I can remember that being the case. Were you excited when Tom Thibodeau and Steve Clifford got voted into the All-Star game in the East?
What pray tell could you mean by that?
Well, the coaches vote for this stuff, obviously, and joking aside, I think more realistically, what probably happened was that there was a Miami vote that got split between
exactly.
Butler and
Bam. I'm sure that's what happened. Most of these coaches put one Miami player on because they felt like the Heat couldn't have two, and they split it between Butler and Bam. So neither of them ended up getting enough votes to get over the threshold.
Yeah, and a lot of people are like, oh, Julius Randle, he's averaging these unprecedented numbers. And we should probably, in particular, I will apologize to listeners that we didn't get into Zach LaVine's case as much as we should have last week. But let's start with Randle and why I had him significantly behind Bam and Butler. Why did you? I feel like you feel similarly.
Yeah, I do. I thought, first of all, what you're rewarding really is the fact that the Knicks opponents bonked a bunch of open three-pointers for the first 30 games, right? Like, that's the biggest thing that's made him a quote-unquote surprise, right?
Well, and moreover, even if you're going to say that their defense is real, are you putting all the credit for that on Julius Randle? I mean, they are not a fantastic offense by any mean this year. I mean, Randle is helping them survive, to be sure. But I mean, I think anyone who watched their game last night, for example, against Golden State, to say that, like, he was this elite offensive force who's driving their offense, they weren't even going to him down the stretch of the game. You know, it was a lot of Derrick Rose picking pick and roll and Elfrid Payton. And Randall has had a very good season, and his stats, it would be unprecedented for someone with his stats, his, at least his raw counting stats, to be left off the All-Star team. Dan Feldman had a great article that, like, there are 77 players.
That did you see wonderful. That one? It was wonderful. It was perfect because the offenses of all, you know, we're basically at a record moment in offense for the NBA. So there are so many players you can make that point about that, oh, if you have, you know, nobody with this this combination of, you know, points and shooting percentage or whatever has ever been left off the All-Star team. Well, yeah, because it's the whole league right now. I mean, a rising tide lifts all boats.
Yeah. And so particularly with this being a weird season, particularly with this being a season of inflated offense where you've just the raw stats, the points, rebounds and assists, like we kind of went through this with Sabonis last year. Now it's Randall mm-hmm. this year. Like, don't come at me with points per game, rebounds per game and assists per game anymore. Like, we've moved beyond that to tell everybody's stats are going to be impressive. Like, there's particularly, you know, the league-wide average true shooting is 57%. Randall is slightly above that. And there's a certain number of assists, and there's a certain number of rebounds, and there's a certain number of points that any team is going to have. I mean, if you just look, for example, like, you know, I think the, like, 10th leading scorer in the NBA averages 26 a game. I mean, that would have been, like, the third leading scorer in the NBA 10 years ago. And so it's just,
yeah,
everything's out of whack. So you got to look at something else other than points, rebounds, and assists. And to me, it's how is your team doing when you're on the floor? Because, you know, it's still a zero-sum league, right? Like, you got to win games. And then also, like, do you have somewhat of a track record? And as we talked about last week, how is this pick going to look at the end of the year? And I think not having Bam or Butler on there and picking Julius Randle instead really kind of fails in all those categories.
Certainly, I don't think there's one coach in the league who would take Randle over either of those other two guys.
Right, like as far if you're actually like trying to win a basketball game tomorrow, not to mention yeah. in the playoffs, and you know there's things. Oh, like a lot of people are like, "Hey, like you're an idiot. This isn't how it works. Like this is for who has played the best this season." Like, no, that's like first of all, there's no set criteria. I'm of the believer that you should go closer to rewarding the 24 best actual players in the game with a nod, of course, to how performance has been. Like if you haven't played literally at all this year, then you know, you've reached a point where you're not being in consideration. But I wouldn't, particularly with such a weird COVID year, I wouldn't put Butler in that category. And then, oh, by the way, Chris Middleton didn't make it either.
Yeah. That surprised me. I didn't think his case was like to me, Butler and Adebayo not making it was egregious and Middleton not making it was surprising. Right. I thought it was on a slightly different level of surprise.
Yeah, I would actually flip Butler and Middleton just because I think Middleton he's been an All-Star the last 2 years. He's playing even better this year. I think that basically, and this shows you the absurdity of focusing so much on this season, particularly when we have a smaller sample for All-Star this season than we normally do. Like,
yeah, usually
Chris
we have
Middleton's on the team.
Usually we have almost 20 more games in the bank by the time we're selecting the team. So we just have a lot yeah. more evidence built up.
But like Chris Middleton's on the team if the Bucks didn't just have a 5-game losing streak, right?
Yeah, the timing of that losing streak I think really hurt him.
Yeah, but as we know, I mean, coaches would never like put too much focus on what happened recently, right?
Yes, the coaching is a profession of recency bias, unquestionably.
And then Vucevic, to me, I thought he had a little bit better of a case than Randall. The on-off numbers for him are very bad. Some of the, you know, RAPM has him like way at the bottom of the league, you know, mm-hmm. in like the 400s. But I mean, he at least he's a guy where offensively, at least he like gives the Magic like some way to be reasonably viable. You know, yeah. I think that's but you really would be hard pressed to find like any consistency, any rhyme or reason for like, OK, if you're going to reward record, then like how are the Magic getting a guy? You know, I mean, yeah. So
a marginal guy at that. Right. Like it's one thing if like if the coaches had voted if Beal hadn't been a starter, the coaches would have voted him in. It's like, well, OK, you're averaging 30 something a game. But when Vooch was kind of borderline to be in the top 12 to begin with, and then he slips through the cracks and gets in somehow. That's a little odd. Like I thought Vooch was defensible from the perspective of you could make an argument he was one of the 12 best players in the East, but to do an end run around the kind of reward for winning crowd just for him, and again to leave Butler and Adebayo off the team when they, despite their struggles, still have a better record than Orlando. Like, that was weird.
What about LaVine's candidacy? I think we didn't talk about him that much, or we may not have even mentioned him, which was an oversight. He was on my list. I think we just got distracted by
The three guys that I thought, so I had my 12-man team that I wrote about. The three guys I thought that had as good a case as the guys at the back end of my roster were Trae Young, Vooch, and Zach LaVine. And two of them ended up making it, and Simmons and Ben Simmons was my 12th guy, didn't make it, and Butler and Adebayo didn't make it, and Chris Middleton.
Yeah, and LaVine, for a long time...
I'm sorry, Ben Simmons did make it. What am I talking about?
Yeah, he did. And we could talk about that, too. I really enjoyed Tobias Harris's father agent releasing the statement about how Tobias Harris should have been on the team, not saying that, hey, he should have been on the team over...
Instead of the guy in his own team. Yeah. At least he didn't reference assistant coaches.
Oh man, that was fantastic.
That's an all-timer.
So LaVine, for a long time, you know, he put up pretty good stats individually last year, and the Bulls were still, you know, one of the worst offenses in the NBA. And this year, they are actually very solid when he's on the floor. 10.5 points per 100 possessions better when Zach LaVine is on the floor. Now, their defense also gets a lot worse. Part of that is because he doesn't play as many minutes with Thad Young. He has gotten better as a defender, although he also has been overstretched to have to be sometimes even their perimeter stopper. And, you know, I would put their defensive struggles a little bit more on Kobe White and some of the front court guys than him, but he still is clearly not a positive on that end. But Zach LaVine absolutely is driving efficient offense this year. And I thought it was really instructive to see some of these recent games where opponents really had to change their pick and roll coverage to deal with him and that off the dribble three-pointer. And then that was setting up Thad Young making plays off the short roll. And so this is the first year where really Zach LaVine has started to have that gravity and is able to really like put his teammates in better positions to make plays as well, and changing what the defense is doing. So I do think that Zach LaVine, that was not one that I had as egregious a problem with as Randall or Fuge or Simmons for that matter, actually, although I know you disagree on that one.
Yeah, I mean, Randall was the glaring one to me.
So I mean it's, you know, again, when guys are putting up these raw stats, there's really, it's just hard to make like an argument with that. And so you have to go to some other things and also just default to who's the better player. And there's just no coach in their right mind who is going to vote for Julius Randle over any of these guys to actually like try and win a basketball game tomorrow. Yeah. Anything else on the snubs, or should we move on here?
I think we can move on.
So I got some bad news for you. Toilet paper actually doesn't really work that well. Say you got a substance on your arm, one of the more gross substances known to man. You probably wouldn't just take a piece of toilet paper and wipe it off and figure that you're done with it, right? Might want to like get some water involved. And while this has been a problem for a long time, the solution wasn't so easy because it was way too expensive. However, that is no longer the case thanks to the brand new Hello Tushy 3.0 modern bidet attachment. It's stylish, it's eco-friendly, it's easy to install, and most importantly, it is affordable. But you don't have to take my word for it. You can try it out risk-free. There's a 60-day risk-free guarantee and a 12-month warranty. If you already have a Hello Tushy model, upgrade to the new 3.0 model. It cleans itself with the Smart Spray automatic self-cleaning nozzle. It attaches to your existing toilet, requires no electricity or additional plumbing, and cuts toilet paper use by 80%. So it pays for itself in just a few months. Go to HelloTushy.com/PR, easy to remember, /PR, because John and Bennett, you get 10% off plus free shipping. This is a special offer for our listeners. Go to HelloTushy.com/PR for 10% off. HelloTushy.com/PR. Don't forget that /PR to let them know that you came from us. Well, football may be over, but the NBA, college basketball, and the NHL are in full swing. I like it better when football's over, personally. And BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. In fact, BetOnline even covers awards, TV shows, and reality TV. You get real-time updated odds and props on almost anything that you can imagine. BetOnline has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. Head to their website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. That's pretty good. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts, and don't forget the promo code LOCKEDON to let them know that you came from us. Well, give me your thoughts here on this Minnesota situation with Ryan Saunders being deposed and Chris Finch being hired mid-season from the Raptors.
Yeah, really interesting because it's so outside the box, and also because the T-Wolves are getting some flack for it, which I think is probably better directed at the league as a whole, but let's talk about that too. So the thing that they didn't want to do, I mean, they clearly wanted to replace Saunders and they wanted to replace him with Finch. And, you know, the backdrop to this is that I think they probably wanted to do this a long time ago. And politically, this was their moment to do it. The thing they did not want to do, it was the knee-jerk process that every NBA team does, which is promote the top assistant. And then if the players end up liking him, which most of them do, because the assistant coach can be much more the good cop usually than the head coach, then all of a sudden there's a case where there's a situation where, well, the players are making the case to just keep the top assistant, and oh, should we do that? And it just, it kind of screws up what the front office wanted to do. So they decided to take that completely out of the equation and just pluck Chris Finch from Toronto midseason. I think this bothered people because A, like this quote unquote wasn't how things are usually done, even though there was no real defensible reason for why it was done that way. Like the top assistant on a team that's 724 is not entitled to the head coaching job when the, you know, as part of the staff that you have clearly found wanting by replacing the head coach. So I don't really see that part of it. But there is the case here of, because this is the second time this year, right? This happened with Steve Nash in Brooklyn too, where a team made a permanent hire as the head coach without interviewing anyone. And the argument for minority candidates is that this gives them, this makes it much harder for them to get their foot in the door. And is there a case for the NBA to have some kind of Rooney rule, you know, from the NFL that more requires them to at least, you know, interview minority candidates so that even though you can't stop people from hiring who they want to hire, but maybe that makes an impression for next time. Maybe someone who's in that room gets the GM job at another place and says, I remember that guy that we talked to. Because the thing people, I think, don't realize, it's very hard for assistant coaches in the league to make an impression on any organization outside the one they currently work for. You just don't know. Like, you have no idea who is good at quote-unquote assistant coaching just by doing your job in an NBA front office other than word of mouth, or, you know, really meeting with a guy and getting to know him directly.
Yeah, I think an example of that, Stephen Silas interviewed way back in 2016 for the Rockets head job, didn't get it. They went with Mike D'Antoni, but now he's the Rockets head coach 4 years later, in part because of the impression that he made that first time around.
And that's a great example too, because everyone thought that thing was in the bag for D'Antoni from the get-go, but Houston still interviewed like 17 people.
Yeah. I've talked a lot about this. Like, Mark Spears came on, dunked on this summer. Perry Bacon from 538 had some interesting thoughts on coach hiring in football, and we talked about that this summer as well. So if you want to hear more of my thoughts and theirs on this topic, I encourage you to go back and listen to those podcasts over the summer. They should still be green. But I think that something that was really interesting here is, as you noted in your piece, this all comes back to Gerson Rosas feeling the pressure himself at this point.
Yeah, I think that's definitely true, that you feel like you have, you know, once a front office makes a coaching change, I think the clock starts ticking on them a little bit. And I think certainly the way this season has gone in Minnesota, they feel it more, right? With the way LaMelo Ball has played in Charlotte versus the Edwards pick, with the way some of their offseason acquisitions have gone. You know, they've had a couple success stories, but I think it's been more negative negative than positive, certainly. And the year before, even with Jarrett Culver. So that I think they really want to make sure they have their guy going into next season. And so they didn't want to create any opportunity, any daylight for any for anyone else to get in the way of that.
Well, and also there's even more sinister is you hire this coach now, you get him on a long-term contract, and it becomes harder to fire Gerson Rosas next offseason, right? It's if, okay, we've got the interim guy and he's not on a long-term contract, we go into next offseason and the Wolves have continued to be terrible. It's a lot easier to get rid of Gerson Rosas when he hasn't just brought in another coach and he's already on a long-term contract. It's because then you could just replace the GM and the coach at the same time. And Rosas certainly is under deserved pressure.
I think you're giving Glenn Taylor too much credit for forward thinking there. But
yeah, well, you know, there's the team could always get sold.
You never know. You never know.
So I, you know, I don't know that Rosas was thinking in quite that way, but he's also, I think, feeling pressure just for them to be better the rest of this season as well. If only because they're going to give up that pick and they don't want it to be like a super high pick. Now they could, it's top three protected. They could still keep it. But, I mean, that's also a massive embarrassment.
Yeah.
For a front office, even though, I mean, you should treat it as a sunk cost, but you know, when you've got a reactionary owner like Taylor and you're going to get killed in the media, that's a concern.
Yeah.
So definitely. So there's
my argument is like they should actually probably tank and try as hard as they can to get in the top three, because it's, as you said, it's a sunk cost. So whether it's sixth or eighth that they hand over to Golden State, like that doesn't matter. It's trying to get in the top three, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So I completely agree with you, but you know, the moral hazard may not support that, particularly because they just need some optics. There's the business concerns. You know, Ethan Kaysen is a big voice there, mm-hmm. as well. You know, they have just been hammered, but now they're going to have to try and get season tickets for next year. And you know,
again,
keeping your top three.
I would argue winning the lottery would be the best way to get season tickets.
Well, I mean, Wolves fans have had three number one picks on their team in the last like 6 years. Maybe they're even that may not do it in this market. At this point.
That's true.
That's a big part of this, I think, is just the pressure. And if Gerson Rosas, the one thing you can say about him, positive or negative, is when he identifies who he wants, that's who he wants and he goes for it. He did that with Jarrett Culver.
Did with Russell.
Did that with D'Angelo Russell. And so, you know, there were more reports that he wasn't as interested in Edwards and tried to trade that trip pick, but just couldn't do it. And that's what he did with Chris Finch. And he has this background with Chris Finch where they're together in Rio Grande Valley and the Rockets organization. And then he also actually interviewed him back when Ryan Saunders was on the search committee to hire Rosas. So maybe he didn't have quite the freedom that he might have liked to hire a coach. And again, it goes back, though, and I think this is an interesting point on the minority hiring aspect, is Gerson Rosas is desperate right now. And so what do you do when you're desperate? You go to what you're familiar with. You go mm-hmm. to the guy that you know that you have a personal relationship with. And all too often, minority candidates are excluded by that sort of go with what you know thinking.
Yes, exactly. And like I said, I mean, the NFL has the Rooney Rule, and it hasn't done a whole lot, you know, for being honest. No. But I think that there's the argument that you at least do what you can as a league to keep that door open and be as fair as you can.
Yeah. But that said, if Gerson Rosas was like, yes, Chris Finch is the guy that I want, and I think Chris Finch is actually a perfect hire, by the way. Like, this is not casting aspersions on him at all. We can talk more about that in a second. But if you're going to hire an assistant off another team like this midseason after firing your coach, and there's no other way to do it than the way that they did it, like, you can't go through some process, right? Like, if they had done that, they may not have gotten Chris Finch. If they waited to the offseason, they may not have gotten Chris Finch. He might have signed somewhere else. Because he had a lot, he was a finalist in Indiana this year as well. So
yep.
if you decided that, yes, we want Chris Finch, like, this is the only way to do it. You can't, there's no way to open up that process.
It would have been hard. Yeah, they probably would have, because they would have had to had an interim coach, right, for at least a little while. They could have maybe done some interviews, you know, during the break, but it would have been suboptimal, to say the least. I mean, you know, when you're hiring somebody on the fly like that, that's why it usually is the top assistant who just gets promoted.
Yeah.
Because it's just hard you can't to do just, anything else.
Right. Well, and the idea too, I definitely understand the concerns that they did not interview any minority candidates, but the idea that David Vanterpool like wasn't given a shot, I don't think that that is a fair criticism. They're familiar with the guy. He's been in the organization, and they also interviewed him back in 2018 as well, I believe. So with respect to him specifically, you know, I don't think that he wasn't, you know, didn't get enough consideration. I mean, you could say they considered him and they made the wrong decision and they should have hired him. And mm-hmm. like, all right, that's fine. I don't really know whether that would have worked out or not. Nobody does. But in terms of like him specifically not getting a fair shake, I don't think that's a reasonable criticism.
I mean,
with respect to him alone,
those arrows to me are much sharper if we talk about the Nets.
Yes. Yeah, I think that's true. So, but that said, Chris Finch, I think, and Karl-Anthony Towns seems like kind of a match made in heaven.
How so?
Well, Chris Finch was the guy who really first unlocked Nikola Jokic in Denver.
Mm-hmm.
He also unlocked, then he went to New Orleans, and they ran a ton of stuff through Boogie Cousins. I think he had a career high in assists there as well. He was averaging over 5 assists a game. And Karl-Anthony Towns is a good passer. He can dribble. I would like to see much more of things running through Karl-Anthony Towns. You know, they run a lot of pick and roll in Minnesota. And now D'Angelo Russell as an off-ball guy, we saw that didn't really work that well in Golden State last year. But to me, I want to see Karl-Anthony Towns dribbling the ball up. I want to see him just backing guys down into a post-up from the perimeter the way Jokic does. I want to see cutters flying off him, you know, use the athleticism of guys like Culver and Anthony Edwards. Now, the only, again, Ricky Rubio is another guy who's like an on-ball point guard. So, you know, they don't have the Jamal Murray types to like fly off of handoffs and then, you know, shoot a pull-up jumper. And you know, so it's the perimeter personnel isn't as well fixed to that. But to me, I want Karl Towns initiating far more than he has so far in his career. And Ryan Saunders was supposed to do that after Tibbs didn't really do that good of a job with him. And that didn't happen. And so that's what Chris Finch has been saying, is the ball is just going to be in Karl Anthony Towns' hands more. And that's what I really like about the hire.
Yeah, and I mean, I do think, I mean, everything I heard about Finch and going back to the G League, you know, he has a track record in the G League, which I always like, that the coaches who are head coaches in the G League, I feel like you have a much better idea of what you're getting. As opposed to somebody,
those guys have been really successful.
The track record is generally good. It's, you know, it's Dave Yeager, it's Taylor Jenkins, it's Finch, it's Nick Nurse. Yeah, so they've turned out generally to be good hires. I'm sure I'm missing a few guys in here. I think
there's Mark Daigneault. Mark Daigneault has been really good.
Yes. They just get so many reps down there. It's just super helpful. So I like that about his background. So, you know, if I had like a short list of coaching candidates, like Finch definitely would have been at the very top of guys who had not yet been head coaches who would be possibly likely to make good head coaches.
Yeah. He's got some international experience as well, which I think is always good. As I think about it, John, like, I can't think of any guys who were head coaches in the G League. Quinn Snyder, by the way, is another one, I think.
Yes.
Then Austin Toros. Yeah. I can't think of guys who are head coaches in the G League who have really flopped. I'm sure there's some, but none of them come to mind for me.
I'm drawing a blank as well. I'm sure there's some, what's that form of bias? Availability bias?
Kevin Pelton could tell us. He is he is big on all these ones. Anything else you want to talk about with the Wolves? I mean, I guess they still have to figure out how to improve the defense. I don't know that Finch has a lot of chops there, but
yeah,
I'm interested to see what it looks like. Not a ton of practice time, obviously.
Well, that's a big thing. You're barely going to have any in the second half of the year, the way these schedules are going to be. They come out by the time you hear the show, the schedules will be out, but they probably aren't going to have a lot of practice time. He's inheriting the same assistant coaching staff, which that's not awkward at all. So yeah, that's going to be an interesting situation for him.
Well, and what I think I would do, honestly, particularly because they're so out of it, is I might actually even prioritize practice time early on more than games, and just, you know, try to get some good practices in and say, all right, Carl, you know, we're just going to play you 25-30 minutes in some of these games. And, you know, because we need to get up to speed, and that'll actually pay more dividends than, you know, particularly in games they're probably not going to win anyway. So maybe just try and get a couple practices in to install his system and prioritize that instead of winning the next few games. All right. Anything else on that, or should we get to our next segment here?
Well, I think talking about the Timberwolves could not be a more perfect segue into eliminating a team from the playoffs.
Here at the Locked On Network, rockauto.com is one of our favorite family businesses. They serve auto parts customers online, but they do it with that family touch. The chain store for auto parts, that model doesn't work anymore. They have different price tiers for professional mechanics and do-it-yourselfers. You go in, there aren't any parts out in the front. You go up to that desk, the guy goes into the computer system, they don't have your part. They say they can order it. You have to go back to the store again to get it. Why not just go to rockauto.com, enter your make and model, and shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. They've got everything from engine control modules and brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, even new carpet. So go to rockauto.com right now, see all the parts available for your car or truck. Make sure you write Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box so they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need, rockauto.com. The average protein bar is quite terrible. It tastes like one of those layers of sedimentary rock at the top of the Grand Canyon. Built Bar has solved that problem, though. They are now up to 18 amazing flavors, 6 new ones. Cherry Barcia, cookies and cream, caramel brownie, lemon almond cheesecake. That goes with the 12 original flavors like raspberry, German chocolate, peanut butter brownie, double chocolate, mint brownie. They taste so good because they're covered in 100% chocolate and they're soft and easy to chew, but they are still great for the health conscious guy. You can lose or maintain weight while indulging in a delicious treat. Bars are low calorie, low sugar, high protein, high fiber, great for a keto diet. For example, their peanut butter bar, 19 grams of protein, 180 calories, 5 grams of sugar, just 5 grams of net carbs. And you can get a free cooler with purchase while supplies last. Go to builtbar.com and use the promo code LOCKEDON, the name of this network. You'll get 20% off your next order. That's promo code LOCKEDON for 20% off at builtbar.com. Oh, well, yeah, actually, I have yet to eliminate the Minnesota Timberwolves from the playoffs.
They might actually be eliminated before you get around to picking them.
Yeah. Well, it is kind of funny. I mean, I guess, should we talk briefly about, like, did Ryan Saunders deserve to get fired? Yes.
I mean,
is that brief enough?
let me put it this way. Did he have a case to have his contract extended? Right? Clearly not. Yeah. Like, I don't know. Like, you're either in or you're out when you're dealing with your head coach. So it's a cruel business that way. But
yeah, and I think, like, Feldman, again, to cite him once more, had a good thought of, like, don't think of it as why should this guy be fired? Why does he deserve to get fired? It's why should this guy get retained? That's really, to me, is more the question.
Yeah.
And I don't think he had an answer to that, even though I will acknowledge, joking aside, the fact that he never actually had the team together that he was supposed to have, but, you know, with Towns and Russell just never being there. But I think it was pretty clear, even with Towns out, that he certainly wasn't getting the most out of D'Angelo Russell to the extent that that's possible. And clearly Gerson Rosas identified Russell as someone he thinks is really good. And so when you make all these moves as the GM, you know, Culver hasn't really developed. Edwards, you know, it's been, I did a long segment on him for Dunked On. You know, the way that he's being used is maybe not optimal, though, again, you know, maybe there obviously are some issues with the player there as well. So I just don't think he had an argument to be retained. Like, you're 7-24 and nothing good has really happened under your watch, even relative to the talent available.
Yes.
Okay. So eliminating a team from the playoffs here, I have ruled out the Thunder, the Pistons, and the Cavs. Cavs won last night. I'm sure we're going to talk about that in a second. So let's see here. I am very glad I did not pick the Washington Wizards yet.
The resurgent Washington Wizards.
Yeah.
Garrison Matthews lost his first game as an NBA starter last night, I believe.
I am going to go with the Wolves. It seems like, they're clearly the best remaining candidate. I mean, the only other one I would have thought of maybe was the Magic, but the Magic still have a 20% chance to make the playoffs per 538. So, I will go with the Wolves.
Wow. All right.
I want to see where you're going to go here, though.
Oh, I'm just going to pick Minnesota every week. So who have I picked so far again?
You've picked Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
That was your first pick. The Orlando Magic was actually your second pick, interestingly enough.
All right.
And the Cleveland Cavaliers, you and I both picked them last week.
Okay. All right. All right. I think it's time for me to go with the Thunder here. 12-19, you know, not really particularly good at either end. They're 30th in offense, actually, even with Shai Gilgeous-Alexander playing pretty well. Surely they will trade Al Horford and George Hill before the year ends, which will drag them down more.
Yeah. They'll probably. I don't know about Horford. Horford might be a tough one, but just because he makes so much and he's got so much salary remaining too. But Hill, definitely, he's gone.
Yeah. Yeah, they will probably call Poku back up from the G League and go back to giving him 20 minutes a game, which will be hilarious, but will not improve their win total.
The play, if you guys haven't seen it, by the way, the play where he calls for the ball when he's out of the game on the bench, but like standing right where a corner 3-point shooter would be, and he gets thrown it.
It's amazing. Like,
he raises his arms up. Amazing. He may have just been like prematurely celebrating what he thought was going to be a shot, but to like put his arms up, but then they throw the ball. That was, he also, to his credit, had like a sick touch pass as well. But just do yourself a favor and look up that clip.
Exactly. It's all over Twitter and YouTube and whatever. I'd say they're a pretty easy call at this point.
You want to do like a brief postmortem on them?
You know, a lot of things have actually gone pretty well for them this year, I think. They've won more games than people expected, actually. You got seven players, 22 or younger, who are, like, playing real minutes. I think Lou Dort has shown a little bit more offensively and, like, as a shooter. He's at 31% from three, and he's launching a bunch. So that's encouraging, right? Shai, like we talked about, was borderline all-star candidate. Hamidou Diallo, been one of the most improved players in the league. Darius Bazley, you know, he's only 20 years old. He's kind of in and out a little bit. I'd like it if he passed a little more often, certainly. But he, you know, he's definitely shown some signs. Tale Maledon is only 19. He's been serviceable, I would say. Probably a little overmatched right now, but seems like he could get to the point of being useful. Isaiah Roby, good kind of scrap heap guy. Dallas just left him on their doorstep. They played him as a five, and he's actually been pretty productive. So I think there's a lot of good things beyond the draft picks that have come out of this season for OKC. They just got to consolidate, and it's going to take a while.
Really underrated player in their recent surge has been Kenrick Williams.
Absolutely.
Well. Yeah. Mike Muscala, maybe they could get a Vicha Zubac for him.
The stealth trade candidate, he's on a minimum deal, and he's having probably the best season of his career. So they could get a second for him.
Yeah, he's going to. His three-point shooting was over 40%. He's fallen off a little bit of late here. Yeah, and Shai maturing into like a legitimate all-star candidate, shooting 41% from three, and that is like basically all off the bounce, too. Like, he doesn't exactly have anybody setting him up. I looked at the stats on that the other day, and basically it'd be nice if he could hit a shot under 30% from three, like it looked like in the bubble. He might be able to be a little bit better of a shooter, but yeah, I mean, they got to feel good about this, and now they've been officially eliminated from the playoffs by both of us. They can concentrate on losing some games and making sure they get Cade Cunningham in the draft.
Absolutely. Be an easy trip for him from Stillwater to Oklahoma City.
So let's, we each are going to pick two stories here that we feel like aren't being talked about enough. And where I wanted to start with on this is potential extensions for guys who got traded to teams over the summer. You would imagine, particularly given some of the assets that were given up, that there is at least an understanding of what it would take for this player to re-sign. We know that there is a lot of money out there in 2021 free agency, and very little in terms of players. And so I think you would think that teams would be scared of that. So the first guy I want to talk about is Drew Holiday, who's going to be extension eligible, I believe, later this week. Do you think that that happens? And what should the offer be if you are the Milwaukee Bucks?
I do think it happens. And I think the price is going to end up being high because Drew Holiday is going to be the best unrestricted free agent if he opts out. So they're probably going to have to go longer and bigger than they would have wanted, you know, 4 years at 30 a pop or something. They give him the Hayward bag.
Yeah, I think when they traded for him, obviously they needed to get Giannis to sign the extension. That was a big part of it. And you would be crazy, though, I think, to have not at least gotten an idea that he would want to stay in Milwaukee. But if you're Drew Holiday right now, you're two more months from the end of the season, and then you can play some playoffs with this group. I mean, so you can get some information on whether you want to stay here. You know, maybe they lose in the second round again or something, and another team with cap space, like Miami or Dallas, comes calling. Drew would be an excellent fit in both those places. I mean, that's part of the beauty of Drew Holiday, is that, you know, every team can use him. He can play the one, he can play the two, he defends a lot of positions, he can shoot. He's a very versatile player, even at age 31. If I were him, I probably, and he's also made plenty of money in his career. Mm-hmm. I mean, so like the maximum extension that they can give him is, you know, he's making 25 this year. So basically bump that up to starting at a little bit over 30. And yeah, so I mean, I think it would be, they have to give him more, I think, than $30 million a year over 4 years. I mean, he also could get the 5-year deal with the Bucks if he waits until the offseason, which he can't. But maybe it's just like the agreement that they had, or kind of the wink wink that this is what the outline is going to be, and then he gets extended. What do you think? You think it gets done, or do you think he goes into free agency?
I think it'll be a tell on whether they agreed to something ahead of time, basically, because if something gets done, to me, that's something that was done before the trade ever happened, right?
Yeah.
That you have that conversation about, here's what the parameters would be. There's no way in hell we're giving up all these draft picks unless you agree right now that you want to be a part of this. And usually you can more or less trust a good agent to hold to that. So that would be the tell for me. And obviously, if they didn't come to an agreement, then you know that didn't happen.
Yeah, and I think if you're Milwaukee, so let me see here. What is the maximum that they could give him? So it's right around 4 years, $139 million or so. I'm just eyeballing that. So don't hold me to that exactly, cap dorks. I'm just figuring that out on the fly. But I mean, I think you probably want to offer him that, because at a minimum, you could move him later on that deal, even as early as this summer if it doesn't work out and you feel like you have to go in another direction. Like, just locking him up, he'll at least be in demand in the early part of that contract for teams that are trying to win now. It seems like it's more of a win now ethos around the league, mm-hmm, than anyone else. And so it's just, you know, if I get offered that by Holiday, for me, I'd be more concerned about, like, do I really want to stay in Milwaukee? How's this team? What are my other options? Should I consider them? But I mean, you have to imagine it's probably just going to happen, right? Otherwise they wouldn't have traded for him.
That has to be. Yeah. I have a hard time imagining. I mean, we've seen stranger things in this league, but man.
Yeah, I mean, this front office has had their foibles. I mean, can you imagine how Giannis feels if they lose early in the playoffs and then Drew Holiday just leaves for nothing in free agency this offseason?
Yeah, that'd be pretty wild.
How are you feeling then? There was some speculation that perhaps they got Giannis to sign the deal by saying, hey, if you want to get moved later, we'll do it for you. But yeah, we'll see. I mean, this Bucks team, they've lost all these games without Drew. They're going to start looking better now that he's back, I'm sure. Well, John, since we've discussed it for so long, Drew Holiday has got to be the Michelob Ultra Player of the Week. It's only worth it if you enjoy it. And with 2.6 carbs and 95 calories, that is the case for Michelob Ultra. Joy creates success. Enjoyment isn't the end game. It's the whole game. Michelob Ultra asks, are you happy because you win? Or do you win because you're happy. But yeah, that'll be fascinating. Dennis Schroeder is another player who he actually has been extension eligible for a little bit. That deal got done before the draft, so he's been eligible for a little bit. What are your thoughts on a potential extension for him with the Lakers?
That's an interesting one because, like, has he been that good? And what's his market in the offseason? Surely it's above the mid-level, but, like, is somebody really going to fork out $20 million a year for Dennis Schroeder? I have my doubts.
Yeah, so here are your free agent point guards. You know, Dennis was like, yes, I'm a starter. I should be starting this year. Chris Paul probably opts in, but you got Drew Holiday, Kyle Lowry. I would put Spencer Dinwiddie still above Dennis Schroeder, even coming off the ACL, although I'm not sure the league would agree with me. Mike Conley,
I was about to say, yeah.
Recently, there was a Tony Jones had an article sort of implying that he really likes it in Utah and he could go back there. We'll see what ends up happening there.
That's a big tax hit if they keep him.
I mean, and we'll see if maybe they have to move somebody there, or maybe, I mean, you know, they win the championship this year. It's a lot easier for Ryan Smith to fork over. And then you got some restricted guys too, Lonzo Ball, Devontae Graham as well. So, you know, I'd put Schroeder maybe like, you know, fifth or sixth on the list of available starting point guards. And I think it's really kind of more about just like, well, if he leaves, LA can't replace him. It's the bird rights trap again that you were talking about last summer.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So LA will be incentivized to keep him, although there is a bit of a luxury tax issue if they pay him too much. So something, I think there's a number right around what he's making that makes sense. I just don't see what the incentive is to go beyond that.
Yeah, he's making a little over 15 right now. But my guess would be that he thinks that he can get more. And I mean, for me, I don't know if I would want to commit to that. Yeah, you can't replace him, but he hasn't been that good this year. I think actually that, and it's also, you know, this is one where maybe it's a little surprising they haven't agreed already since he's been eligible for like a week or so now. But we're going to find out a lot about how well he fits with this group with AD out and him being the guy. He's been out due to the coronavirus protocols, but, you know, can he be a viable second unit creator? He's never really been able to do that as the lead guy to drive efficient offense for his team. And then obviously in the playoffs too, like I think he's been solid defensively against smaller players this year, but also could get taken advantage of due to his size and you know, can he really produce in the playoffs? So I got a lot of questions about that, but the Lakers obviously evaluated him much more highly than I did, I think, to begin with when they traded for him.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting because you also have the argument in LA. Can they get somebody of similar or maybe slightly lower but almost similar quality with their full mid-level exception if they don't keep him? Because I believe they would have access to the full MLE if they don't re-sign him.
Yeah, let's see here. Yeah, I think they probably would be able to do that. Oh, I mean, they've got some other free agents like Harrell as well, Alex Caruso, who could potentially, Talen Horton Tucker as well,
could potentially. Yeah, you're right. Their summer is more interesting than I implied. Yes, you're right. I was looking narrowly through the Schroeder lens, but yeah, they got some. Yeah, I mean, so that could be an argument for them actually to not pay him too much, because if you're setting aside, you know, what do you think Harrell's going to get? Like, he's had a good year, actually. He might get 10 or 15. Caruso certainly is going to be up for a contract. Horton Tucker could get a mid-level offer sheet from another team. So they got some choices to make.
Yeah, and you could say, hey, you know, what if they could they just, like, bring in someone like Derrick Rose as a more of a stopgap guy? I mean, I think it all just comes down to what level of production you're actually getting from Dennis Schroeder. Like, if you think of him as like, yeah, this guy is clearly a bona fide starting point guard where when LeBron James is off the floor, he can run the offense and will be good. That's one thing. But if he doesn't prove capable of that, then it's like, why not just go into the bargain bin for like a normal backup point guard?
Exactly.
Although there's also a thought that he plays well with LeBron, which, you know, maybe, but he's shooting a little bit better. We'll see how that plays out. All right. That was a long one here. We got probably like 10 minutes left or so. What is an underrated story that you wanted to focus on?
Can we talk about the playoffs?
And why would we do that?
The plan for the playoffs? I mean,
oh, as far as like, will it be
or not? I don't think anyone's talked about the fact that what the league is doing right now and has done all season does not actually work for the playoffs, right? You can't just postpone everything for a week. It screws up the whole calendar for the whole league. So you have to do something else. And we have no indication yet of what that something else is. But the playoffs are, what, 2.5 months away? Like, if you're going to do a bubble, you kind of need to get on your horse. I mean, that's logistically, that takes a lot to pull together. And we just don't know what they're going to do yet. But what we do know is the thing that they've done all year, and especially the protocols they put in recently that I think have really cut down the transmission between teams and players, where they just shut a team down for a week as soon as there's a positive. You can't do that in the playoffs. So what are they going to do instead?
Well, there's certainly hope that vaccinations could be widespread enough that you could prevent cases that way. They've said that they are not going to jump the line in the sense that all of these places right now, players who don't have underlying conditions and are not essential workers aren't eligible. But you best believe that the moment that, you know, which could be what, like late March, early April, you best believe that the moment that people in their class get eligible, they'll all be vaccinated if they want to be. I mean, now there's some discussion of like vaccine hesitancy. I would imagine that if the choice comes down to, hey, you guys get vaccinated or we got to go into a bubble, vaccination will become a pretty easy
right. choice. Exactly. Yeah. And that could be what they plan on doing. We'll see here. But yeah, vaccinating players in April would obviously be the best option.
Yeah, so I think that's the most likely scenario. And I mean, and also like the bubble won't be as loathsome because for players, because, you know, it'll just be for the duration of the playoffs. It might even just be one series for half of the league. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not like you don't have to get there 2 months before the playoffs were going to start like you did in, I guess it was about 1 month before the playoffs were going to start.
Yeah.
Back in the summer.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, do you think there's any chance that they'll just do what they've been doing?
Boy.
Even if vaccinations are not that widespread?
I think it would be really, you're really playing with fire doing that. What are you going to do in that situation when you have a positive, which inevitably you will?
I don't know if you inevitably would. I mean, I'm not saying it wouldn't happen, but particularly like they're doing a much better job now with these new protocols. I think players will take it a lot more seriously during the playoffs. Many have immunity already as well. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I guess you'd have to just postpone things. And I mean, I don't know whether they're going to have the Olympics or not. You know, that's the whole idea. They want to avoid the Olympics. I mean, I certainly hope that they either get everyone vaccinated or go into a bubble because, you know, I don't want my short 1.5 month summer to get yes. reduced even further.
Do not postpone anything for the love of God. Like, please just give us August and September.
Okay. What is another undercovered story that you wanted to bring to the fore here?
Let's see. I don't know if this is exactly undercover, but should we talk about that? The Nets have been freaking awesome.
Yeah, and that's even without KD as well. Although the call on Kawhi Leonard, the offensive foul against the Clippers, was pretty atrocious.
Yeah,
To win them that last game, but they were up that whole game.
The fact too, is, so they were up by two in the final seconds of a road game at Clippers with short being shorthanded.
Yeah, no Jeff Green at the end of that game either. So I'm pretty impressed by it. And where you have to start, obviously, is just the fact that the offensive ratings with any two of those guys on the floor have just been completely ridiculous.
Yeah, and it's interesting. They finally figured out they had Bruce Brown on their team. I don't know why they had him on the bench for the first month, and kind of unleashed him as this weird 6'4" rim runner, you know, as their role man. But he actually plays defense, so he helps them on that end. And he could be really good in short roles because he can dribble and pass and stuff, even if he's not a shooter. So I think that's a fun little quirk they've put in, and that's helped. I just don't like when you get to the highest levels, this team is just so difficult to guard when you have James Harden on the ball, but you have Kyrie and Durant as threats off of it. It's just, and Joe Harris for that matter. Wahoo, wah. Yeah. Just pick your poison, right? It's unguardable.
Yeah, Harris is over 50% from downtown. And they found something with this switching defense where it doesn't need to be perfect with that offense. It just needs to be enough. I think if you can just switch and because all you need to do basically is just turn it into a one-on-one game. And yes, like Kyrie and Harden are not amazing one-on-one defenders, but Harden at least has experience playing it in that system. And Mike D'Antoni has experience coaching that system. And Durant did a bunch of switching with the Warriors as well. So they at least are able to play it well enough to just not make up a bunch of mistakes and like, you know, miscommunicate and give up wide open shots. And so if you can force them to play one-on-one for half the possessions, they're switching like 40% of screens, which is like a crazy number. Yeah. And hey, guess what? If the other team is playing one-on-one, the Nets have way better one-on-one players than the other team. And so they're just going to beat them.
Yeah. Yeah. The test for the Nets, I think, is just if they play against a team with real size, if they just get mashed on the glass and mashed inside, Philadelphia would be the most obvious example. But even Milwaukee potentially.
Yeah. I think like just being able to get guys in foul trouble is probably one of the bigger things that you could look at. But D'Antoni, his teams don't really foul that much, right? Like they would rather just let you score, not stop the clock with some free throws and come back and hit a three when you just hit a two. So I do, and with the rest of the East not really looking that amazing, you know, I think there isn't a great defensive team, I don't think, in the East that is going to be like even be able to slow them down, right? Like that to me is step one, is can you slow these guys down enough to where you can take advantage of their issues on the other end.
Milwaukee would be the one team that you think might be able to.
Well, the other thing I like too is with Kyrie and Harden, I think they can be pretty bad in transition defense. And so Milwaukee, the way that they run, I think that's maybe where you can make up the offensive issues and maybe you can get just enough defensively. But I mean, the thing is like these teams that really want to protect the rim, they don't even need to get to the rim. They just have like amazing shooters that you just can't stop.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm and we'll see who they pick up. Obviously, I think that's probably the last subject that I wanted to talk about. Is this is one of the most important trade/buyout seasons ever, which is kind of a shame because there's not as much available and the price is certainly going to be high. But there's so many teams that are bunched together that just have kind of run of the mill holes. Like it's not like, oh, we're going to trade for a star. It's just Boston. We need some guys who could do something off the bench. I think you might have mentioned that once or twice.
Yes.
Or Miami with their stretch four issues, or the Bucks just a little defensive versatility off the bench. There's some teams in the West as well that could just use one more piece or so to, you know, like Denver, for example, to maybe get back into the conversation among some of those top teams. So, but particularly in the East, it seems like, you know, Philly could use another creator, but, you know, they don't need someone like super high level. The Nets still can use some more as well, some defensively versatile pieces. So many of these teams just need like a little bit of something.
Yeah.
Because they have the high end talent. They're just getting killed by missing a couple of these support pieces.
And it's a bad year now for that, and maybe going forward, when you have 10 teams rather than 8 chasing for a playoff spot. I think that play-in tournament is going to take a lot of these guys who otherwise might have been available and make them unavailable. Like you think about like Thad Young and how good he might be in Brooklyn.
Oh, yeah.
But that's not going to happen now because the Bulls are going to be in the race all year. And they're not going to short circuit that for a second round pick for Thad Young. So that's a perfect example right there. And even like some of these teams too may not be super realistic. And by the time they come to Jesus on the fact that they're not even going to make the top 10, it may be too late. It may be after the deadline.
Yeah, we're getting a little bit of stratification here in the West. Yeah, you know, it seems like there's going to be 11 teams in for 10 spots. You got Rockets, Kings, Thunder, Wolves. I expect will be out of it by the trade deadline.
I
probably should consider themselves out of it.
Yeah, I mean, I expect that too, but I don't know how much the Rockets and Kings expect that right now. You know, and will they be close enough to tempt themselves to keep pushing for that 10th position? I mean, certainly, well, certainly in Sacramento, you could see that happen, right?
Yeah. I guess we'll see what happens when Christian Wood comes back for the Rockets. But, you know, if they have gone on like a 12-game losing streak by the time Wood comes back, they may. Those losing streaks that do have a way of kind of forcing you to face reality. But I agree with you on the Bulls. And, you know, could you get a... What do you think you could actually get for Thaddeus Young if they put him on the market? He is playing so well right now. But obviously this... And if it were Gar Foreman and John Paxson still in charge of the Bulls, I would agree with you. I'm not sure that Arturas is really that interested in going after the ninth or the 10th seed. I could be wrong on that. I mean, I think it's more likely than not that they are going to just hold on to these guys because they've been good. But there's like this little thought in the back of my mind that Arturas might go outside the box or not enough to kind of zig and not value the 10th seed that much.
Have they made a single trade yet?
I mean, I think the only thing that they did was they drafted Patrick Williams and they re-signed Denzel Valentine on his qualifying offer.
Yeah,
that he accepted in world record time.
Yeah,
Valentine's actually been okay. Actually isn't like it doesn't look crazy to have him on 4.7 million at this point.
They also signed Garrett Temple with their room exception,
which actually was great. Yeah. Garrett Temple's another Temple, Satoransky, Young, like all these guys could really fetch something. You would think, you know, Cody Zeller was another one where I think he could definitely help a team, but with the Hornets around 500 and him playing well, he's kind of a franchise icon at this point. So maybe they'll just bring him back in the summer.
They have no size at all without Zeller.
Yeah. You buy in this Wizards resurgence at all?
Yeah. Like I think they were better than their record was, but you know, could they get to like 10th maybe? Sure. Like I still don't think they're good, but
yeah. The Wizards, by the way, had won 5 straight on many of them on the West Coast, but then they lost to the Clippers on a back-to-back last night. But I mean, I think the reason for optimism there is that Russell Westbrook is actually looking like he can move again now.
Yeah, exactly. So that's a big thing for them going forward, because if he's that level of player, which I think is the player we thought he was going to be coming into the year, then I think they're more like a fringy 10th seed than like one of the worst teams in the East.
I think they can fulfill the expectations I had for them. I think I had them right around 500 this year. I think they can play at that kind of a level the rest of the season. If he's going to get back to being, you know, maybe not 30 a game like he was for the Rockets during his good stretch, but if he could be somewhere in between that and just like one of the worst players in the NBA, I think you'll take that.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, he's actually shot over 50% the last 3 games.
Yeah, yeah. Rui Hachimura's been playing better lately, too.
Oh, man. I don't know if I'm ready to do a full assessment of that.
He's played a little bit better. I'm not getting into any grand proclamations here.
All right, well, I think that will do it for today. Thanks so much for listening. And John and I will return. Will we be back next week? Yeah, that's before the All-Star break. All right, yeah. We'll be back next week. We'll talk to you all then.